The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Great to be with you. Last program of this work week. Some stormy weather outside as well. Some lightning and thunder. That's always nice to come back to in Oklahoma, unless there's a tornado with it. But the thunderstorms are actually quite nice, and I'm sure the campus will benefit from this as well. A little bit of feedback. Responding to yesterday's program, I love David Starkey. That's the historian. We played some clips from him yesterday. Always right, always truthful. He's a brilliant man. Why don't our politicians listen to him? As I was saying on yesterday's program, we could do with a few more historians, good historians, at this moment, just to give us some perspective, just to give us some context, and a little less, a little fewer modelers. I have another update on that here in just a bit. More modeling, and this time one that kind of works in reverse, but it's just as crazy as some of the other ones. Another one here coming from Canada. It says, thank you for you and the rest of the team for making these TDs so grounding, so explanatory of events, so sound-minded. If it wasn't for these programs, I think I would have lost it at the start of this shutdown. It kind of felt like I was in some out-of-body experience. I work right in the heart of where the science comes from, which also happens to be anti-Trump land. I've depended on the TD to really provide that sound-mindedness to combat the rationale, the statistics, the science, the social distancing. It says the everything that the media is throwing at us. Everything that we now know is blown out of proportion at best, and at worst, completely false. I've thanked our Father many times for this program, and it's just helped shed so much light on the situation, and particularly on how Satan is working. Well, earlier this week, just following on that feedback there, we went through Isaiah 1, verse 6, where it talks about there being no soundness. The sickness is from head to toe, and it says there's no soundness in the head. There's no sound-mindedness. There's no sound thinking. That's what God is getting at. It's prophesied, what we're seeing. All the lies, all the deception. All the human reasoning, that quote I gave to you the other day from Lesson 2 of the Correspondence Course, in talking about why even the churches don't have the truth, why even the churches don't understand. It says that it's because they've been educated, so many of these theologians, they've been educated at top secular universities that have replaced a belief in the Bible as the directly inspired word of God with a belief in the infallibility of the scientific method, which relies heavily on faulty human reasoning. That's what it relies upon, this faulty human reasoning. And more, the coverage, besides lacking the soundness, is just so incredibly shallow. The storyline coming out of the president's Michigan visit yesterday is that he didn't wear a face mask. And they're hounding him, and they're following him, and they're asking him why he's not putting on the mask. And then he's responding, I don't want to give you the pictures, the images that you're seeking with me wearing a mask. He visited the Ford factory, by the way, and we were just there last year visiting the Ford Museum on one of the days that we had a pack there in Detroit, and that was just an excellent visit if you have the chance and you're in Detroit and you can tour through the Ford Museum. It's well worth the trip. I'm not sure if the president saw that part of it or if he just visited the factory. In any event, He was there. He was giving a speech. He gave the speech without a mask covering his face. I guess when he was back in the factory away from the cameras, he did have a mask on. But he took it off when he came out in front of the cameras. And he gave this speech yesterday. Here was one excerpt actually that stood out to me from the president's remarks. Clip one.
1 month ago, Ford had never built a single ventilator. And now you're a world leader. That's not bad. You adopted the designs of a company that was building just 10 a week, but a very high quality ventilator. And very soon you'll be producing one new ventilator every single minute.
Ventilator every single minute. This is from yesterday. And of course, the curve has flattened. The curve has been crushed. And there is no need for ventilators, even in New York, as we've heard, all the extras that they sent there. And now that this, I think it's kind of cool that the factory has set aside its work on the Ford F-150s to get behind this push by the government. But the need for ventilators, we're just, I guess, supposed to do it. Even as the curve flattens, what are we going to do with all of the excess ventilators? One ventilator every minute, every single minute. Ford's going to have so many of these, they're going to be offering them with their F-150s. They're going to be driving around with ventilators in the back, in the bed of the truck. There's probably enough room for two of them. Where are these ventilators going? And the ventilators, as I've said before, that's like a death sentence. The last thing you want to be on is a ventilator. 90% of the people that go on them end up dying. So anyway, the factories are hard at work producing one ventilator after another, and we're now trying to get it down to one per minute. One ventilator every single minute. We're living in a country with, 330 million people? The death toll, the COVID-related figures, it's up around 95, 96,000, I guess. The excess deaths, the new deaths, it's probably less than half of that. And one ventilator every single minute. And then the face mask rule. We're going to have billions and billions of face masks because we can't go anywhere without strapping those to our face to make sure that we're protecting ourselves and others. And so they're hounding the president. They're hounding President Trump because he's not wearing a face mask in Michigan. The Michigan Attorney General, she was on CNN with Wolf Blitzer. And, well, they went back and forth over whether or not the president would even be welcome again in Michigan because he broke the rule. He broke the face mask rule. This was the Michigan Attorney General, Dana Nessel, yesterday on CNN, clip two.
Is the president no longer welcome in Michigan?
Well, I will say, speaking on behalf of my department and my office, that's right. That's exactly right. I mean, today's events were extremely disappointing and yet totally predictable. And I will say that, you know, understanding, of course, that his own doctor, Dr. Fauci, his own medical expert, recommends the wearing of masks in public enclosed spaces. The CDC makes that recommendation. In Michigan, of course, now that is the law. And in fact, a court just upheld that, just upheld the governor's orders just hours ago, and even in Ford, it is their own policy. So the president is like a petulant child who refuses to follow the rules.
That's the Michigan Attorney General. She's the chief law enforcement officer of Michigan. And she's letting the world know that the governor of Michigan has made a decree, and this is now the law. And the president of the United States is violating the law. And he is not welcome to come back to Michigan. The president of the United States. And then there's the veiled threats of the Michigan authorities now going after the Ford plant because they didn't enforce the law. Here is this woman, this tyrannical attorney general. She's the law enforcement officer in Michigan. and the extreme and radical views coming from the governor herself. What does that do for her? Well, it immediately puts her right at the front of the pack for the vice presidential nominee under Joe Biden. This is what they want, the radical left. They want to lower the boom on anyone. Anyone who would dare violate the thou shalt wear a mask everywhere rule. She went on, this Michigan attorney general, to say this, clip three.
I think the message he sent is the same message since he first took office in 2017, which is, I don't care about you. I don't care about your health. I don't care about your safety. I don't care about your welfare. I don't care about anyone but myself.
That's her take on President Trump. This is the chief law enforcement officer in the state of Michigan. You see the mindset there. It's the same mindset that Bob Mueller and his team had. It's the same mindset that Jim Comey had. It's the same mindset that John Brennan had. It's the same mindset Jim Clapper had. It's the same Barack Obama mindset, the Antiochus mindset. No wonder they were spying on everyone. No wonder they turned the SWAT team loose to arrest some of these Trump supporters in the middle of the night. If you break their rules, you're going to jail for a long time. This is now the law. Says who? Well, the governor. She made a decree, thou shalt wear a mask. And the president of the United States, he didn't wear one. So he's not welcome in Michigan. And Ford, well, we've got to look into this. I'm the attorney general after all. The Ford Motor Company may have broken the law. It's incredible. This is the chief law enforcement officer in Michigan. And my father said, had Hillary Clinton been elected, the destructive trends that unfolded during the Obama presidency would have continued unchecked. And they surely would have intensified. It says many people, including me, believe it would have meant an end to our constitutional republic. You see how some of these governors and AGs are behaving. It's frightening to think about if that same mindset was still in the White House. Look at what they were doing. Speaking of masks, as I said earlier this week, they have been unmasked. They have been exposed. They have been exposed for all of their lawlessness. These are people that would say, well, spying, that's no big deal. We can spy on Americans. Forget about their rights as an American citizen. But you better wear a mask. If you don't wear a mask, you could go to jail. They've got it completely upside down. That's what they want. They want to bring down the whole system. And Herbert Armstrong was right on top of that decades and decades and decades ago. God intervened. God looked at this sickness. There's no soundness. He looked at this sickness and he had mercy on the people of Manasseh and the people of Ephraim by extension. And he intervened and saved us temporarily by the hand of Jeroboam. That's what your Bible says. Listen to this Michigan Attorney General, one last clip, clip four.
He is a ridiculous person, and I am ashamed to have him be president of the United States of America.
Can you imagine any, and there were quite a few politicians and I'm sure law enforcement officials that did not care at all for Barack Obama's policies. But can you imagine an attorney general in one of the most populated states of America following a trip, a visit from Barack Obama? Can you imagine an attorney general saying he's a ridiculous person and I'm ashamed to have him be president of the United States of America? This is not Joy Behar on The View. This is the Michigan Attorney General, the chief law enforcement officer in the state of Michigan. She says about her president, he is a ridiculous person. He is a petulant child.
He broke the law.
It's no wonder President Trump keeps talking about how sick they are. They are scum, he says. Who's closer to the truth? Well, look at Isaiah 1. Sickness from head to toe. There is no soundness in it. We've been talking in the last couple of weeks quite a lot about this spiritual sickness. Everyone's focus, of course, is on the physical. But even there, when you look at the nursing home crisis, the tragedy, particularly in the state of New York, what kind of spiritual or mental sickness is it that says, hey, let's put the sick people in with the nursing homes? Let's put the COVID positive people in with all the elderly and infirmed. And that policy was in place, what was it, something like 6 weeks? The March 25th decree, here's another decree coming from a governor. This is now the law. You are forbidden. If you're a nursing home, you are forbidden from turning away COVID positive patients. You've got to accept them in. I said so. I'm the governor. That's now the law of New York. And that's what Governor Cuomo did. And then finally, a week and a half ago or so, he finally removes that decree. He finally sets it aside, quietly, of course. But the damage has already been done. Here's how the governor explained his actions going back over the last 6-8 weeks. Clip 5.
Is this new policy though something of a recognition, though, that the idea of sending COVID-positive people from hospitals back into nursing homes may have been flawed? That may have been a mistake?
No. First of all, if you look at the facts, which is always fun, you can test your hypothesis on what's flawed. Look at how many residents we have in nursing homes. Look at the percentage of our deaths in nursing homes vis-a-vis other states, right? We're down by like number 34. So whatever we're doing has worked on the facts. At one time, hospital beds were precious. When we started this, remember, the whole question was, will you have enough hospital beds? We were in a scramble to provide more hospital beds, right? Go from 50,000 to 40,000, 110,000. So the last thing you would be doing would be gratuitously saying, we're going to keep a person in a hospital bed who doesn't need a hospital bed, who could be at another facility. You would never do that. It would be reckless. It would be negligent because you needed the hospital bed so badly.
That's the governor from, May 10th, I guess it is. The reporter asked him, you know, reversing this decree that went out, is that an admission that your policy was flawed? Oh, no. It worked, in fact. Look at the numbers. Crunch the numbers, he said. And we've been doing that over the last several programs. Thousands and thousands casualties coming out of nursing homes. But he's convinced he did everything the right way. Everything that he did worked. It always does. It works. Even if it's a tragic failure. Evidence, facts, that doesn't matter. He just throws other numbers out there and says, the facts, the evidence, it's all on my side. That's the way the modelers work. The same thinking. They can't do any wrong. They can't admit any error. They are infallible. And if they issue the decree, like the woman in Michigan, or this governor of New York, then it has to be right. PJ Media had a piece just the other day, yesterday. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who ordered nursing homes to take patients from hospitals without testing them for the coronavirus, is now blaming the more than 5,000 nursing home deaths in his state on Donald Trump. It's now President Trump's fault, you see. So here's what he said more recently. First, as you just heard there, he's saying, well, it worked. He's gotten, at least there's a one or two reporters that's asked him a little bit of a tough question. And even that one you just heard was pretty nice about it. Is this a, you know, an admission that the policy was flawed? Oh, no, no, it was just fine. Everything worked just fine. Now he's pressed on it further, and he's saying, well, I'm just doing what President Trump said to do. Here's clip six.
One more, Governor. There is a call for a federal probe into how the state handled the nursing home situation, specifically the March executive order allowing COVID-positive patients back into the nursing homes. In reflecting on comments, I was wondering, why was that executive order made at the time?
Yeah, you should tell your... Look, this is a political season. I get it. I have refrained from politics. I'm not going to get into the political back and forth. But anyone who wants to ask why did the state do that with COVID patients in nursing home, it's because the state followed President Trump's CDC guidance. So they should ask President Trump. I think that will stop the conversation.
So they should ask President Trump. Now, if President Trump goes into Michigan and doesn't wear a face mask, well, we have the law of Michigan that says you can't come back then. You stay out of our state. And then when things go tragically wrong in these states, how easy it is for them to say, well, we're just doing what the CDC said. It's actually President Trump's fault. He's actually in the power position here. They want to have it both ways. They want to do whatever they want to do, and they want the President of the United States to keep his nose out of their business. And then there is an actual scandalous tragedy, and it's all put on the president's shoulders. He's responsible. Here the president was trying to get them ventilators, all of this this protective equipment. He sent the Navy ship up there. He helped build the Javits Center just to give them more beds. There were empty beds on the Navy vessel. There were empty beds by the hundreds, by the thousands, if you count Javits together with the Navy ship. All of these empty beds. And yet here is the governor of New York turning patients away, ordering them back into nursing homes. Fox News said yesterday, Governor Andrew Cuomo on Wednesday brushed off calls for the Department of Justice to open an investigation into the massive number of deaths in the state's nursing homes during the coronavirus pandemic, claiming he was only following guidelines from the Trump administration. No, there's nothing to investigate here. Say the people who wanted to investigate the president of the United States nonstop, before and after he became president. One investigation after another. They investigated a phone call to the Ukrainian president. I noticed, and of course the mainstream media is not going to pick this up either. Transcripts. Phone conversations that Vice President Biden had with Ukrainian officials over firing that inspector or that attorney general or the equivalent of an attorney general before the United States would give Ukraine $1 billion. Quid pro quo. CNN's not going to be interested in that at all. Not at all. No need for an investigation here. All of these casualties. PJ Media says Cuomo issued that directive about the time that liberals had come up with the idea that imposing a virus stigma on people was wrong and singling sick people out to get a test for coronavirus might hurt their feelings or something. What did the CDC guidelines actually say? CDC guidelines require any newly admitted and readmitted resident with the COVID-19 case to be placed in a designated COVID-19 care unit, while those who have met the criteria to have recovered can return to a regular unit in the nursing home. It says New York, along with California and New Jersey, at the time had specific guidelines saying that nursing homes cannot refuse to take patients from hospitals solely because they have the coronavirus. So he's lying. He came up with his policy, as did New Jersey and California. It wasn't what the CDC said. It says, when questioned about the deaths in nursing homes and possible investigation into his role, Cuomo deflected the blame onto the Trump administration's guidelines and suggested the calls for a probe are politically motivated. It's just political back and forth in his mind. I realize it's a political season and so on. Well, the article goes on to talk about the smug, self-righteous leadership that we see in New York and elsewhere. Cuomo's a politician, it says, and nothing bad or catastrophic is ever a politician's fault. That's about the way that it is today, unless, of course, it's the Trump administration. But any left-winger, any Democrat, can you imagine, as someone wrote earlier this week, if New York was headed up by a Republican governor, can you imagine the coverage coming from CNN and the New York Times and the Washington Post? As it is, they're out there trumpeting the models, the face masks. This was yesterday in the Washington Post. Well, I found it this morning. I was actually getting my haircut last night. We were watching the local news. Here's the Oklahoma News, Channel 4, right here in Oklahoma City, talking about this study coming out of Columbia. This is Columbia University. It says, had the U.S. begun social distancing just 1 week earlier, the country would have prevented 36,000 deaths through early May, according to researchers at Columbia University. So here is modeling in reverse. Now they've got a model that goes back in time, and it says if only we would have socially distanced, we could have saved 36,000 people. Where's the study, by the way, on if only Governor Cuomo hadn't have made that March 25th decree? Because there, I mean, you're actually working with some pretty serious facts. Thousands upon thousands have died in nursing homes. This article, The Guardian picked it up, The Washington Post, it says, had action been taken 2 weeks earlier, by March 1st, 54,000 fewer Americans would have died of the virus. There haven't even been 54,000 excess deaths during this crisis. 8,000 Americans are dying every day, keep in mind, of a variety of causes. We do not have, not yet, we do not have 54,000 additional deaths as a result of COVID-19. And yet here are the esteemed researchers at Columbia University saying if only everything would have shut down on March 1st, if only we would have had a lockdown even earlier. See, they wanted it to start earlier, and they wanted it to go on forever. These are the modelers. It's a big business today, as I've said, because you can model, you can lead to catastrophic events with your modeling. You can be the cause, and you can still come out and say, no, everything worked. It worked just fine. What about this decree? All right, is this like an admission that it was flawed? Oh, no. Everything worked fine. Our decrees, our statistics, our evidence, our modeling, our projections, it's all spot on. What did Mr. Armstrong say? The infallibility of the scientific method. It relies heavily on faulty human reasoning. What did the prophet Isaiah say? There's no soundness. There's just no soundness in it. from the sole of the foot, even unto the head. There's no soundness in it but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. God says they have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. That's prophesied. Then you continue on in Isaiah and you read about the dearth of leadership. That's in Isaiah 3, verses 1 and 2. God taking away strong, bold, courageous, eloquent leaders. This lockdown, by the way, there have been quite a few articles about just the way we are approaching this and how soft we've become. And our young people, in particular, at The Spectator, it says youngsters, this is going back to March 16th, I think we've referred to this before, youngsters are ill-equipped to cope in this time of coronavirus. They can't cope. This is one of the most serious problems we face in the 21st century, a shortage of strong natures, says Brendan O'Neill. Today, it's cooler to be a victim. It's cooler to be a victim than to be proudly, morally autonomous, it says. We're encouraged to advertise our wounds rather than to celebrate our free-willed achievements. Fragile natures are the order of the day, especially among the young who interpret every slight as a mortal blow to their self-esteem and every disagreeable idea as an act of structural oppression. This is the way it was before COVID-19. And now, well, we're hunkering down and people don't want to come out. Even though the curve is flattened, people don't want to go back to work. Even young people, they don't want to get on with their lives. At least the productive part. They're still, I'm sure, breaking the rules when it comes to carrying on with socializing and that sort of thing. This is from The Telegraph more recently, April 25th. It says, today's young are twice as likely as parents to experience a quarter-life crisis, study finds. You've heard of a midlife crisis? This is the quarter-life crisis. This is the crisis at 20 years of age. It's too much. There's too many burdens, too many responsibilities, too many threats. Says here, the number of young people suffering a quarter-life crisis has doubled in a generation as they feel locked in or out of big life decisions. Says the study found 60% of millennials had a formative crisis between the age of 25 and 35, compared with 30% of their parents at the same time in their lives. So it's just increasing, it's worsening. Young people that just don't know how to cope. They're unable to take on additional responsibility. They don't like the pressures of life, of responsibility, of responsible living. The Telegraph says here, the rise of the quarter-life crisis, which the research suggests lasts 2 years and clusters around age 30. This is the Telegraph. It's not the Babylon Bee or the Onion. Says there's no doubt that the current way we run adulthood is more conducive to quarter-life crises, says this doctor. For decades, we have pushed back the age at which people need to settle down and put roots down. So, yeah, you know all the trends. Leave your parents' house later. Don't get married until you're in your mid-30s or whatever. As far as having children, well, I mean, that's something you really ought to even consider if you want to do it. We've got to save the environment, after all. A society of snowflakes. This is what our universities, this is what they're churning out. Sadly, this is what our families are churning out as well. The BBC recently featured this helpful 2 or 3 minute video. And, well, I'll just let you listen to it for yourself. Clip 7.
Have you heard all those people on the internet telling you that you need to do more and be more and get more done? It's this idea that if we leave lockdown having not written a novel or learnt a language, that we've somehow failed. That is a toxic productivity message right there.
That's a toxic productivity message right there. Don't worry too much about being productive during the... This is helpful advice from the BBC during lockdown. Don't put too much pressure on yourself. Don't feel too bad about not doing anything. That's toxic productivity. It's toxic. Productivity is toxic, you see. This is not the Babylon Bee or the Onion, as I say. This is BBC. The BBC, Columbia University, the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, Michigan's Attorney General. Sickness through and through. There's no soundness. You think the young people in this church, in God's church, the young people preparing for the summer educational program in July, or coming through the Imperial Academy, or going to Herbert Armstrong College, you think they desperately need this education? They certainly do. Look at what's out there. Look at the alternatives. As I said earlier this week, I think yesterday, that listener that wrote in about the commencement address and just the example of General MacArthur. You know, General MacArthur, he pretty much outworked his competition. He was guilty of some toxic productivity, for sure. What a different time. If he was going to West Point today, well, let's hope it's not the case in West Point. But the educators of today would probably tell Douglas, listen, Douglas, don't work too hard. You don't need to be too productive. And listen, there's diseases. In fact, he was fighting in World War I back in 1918. And as it happens, there was a disease spreading around the world called the Spanish flu. Imagine if he was surrounded by these kinds of educators today, what they would tell him. Look, let's not get overboard here. Now, obviously, there's cases, I'm sure, of people that overdo things or that are immersed into work at the expense of their family. God's not suggesting we do anything like that. But is this the message that our young people need today? Another toxic, you fill in the blank. You've got toxic masculinity. Now you've got toxic productivity. What will it be next? Here's a bit more from that video, clip 8.
Toxic productivity is this obsession with radical self-improvement above all else. And the result is that no matter how productive you are, you're always left with that guilty feeling of not having done more.
Radical self-improvement. Don't try to improve yourself too radically. Don't try to keep producing. Don't try to grow. What does the Bible say over and again? Grow! Improve, overcome. If we're not growing, we're dying. If we're not producing, well, it's not usable in God's sight. God uses the fruit. So if it's not producing fruit, what does John 15 say? Well, he comes in and he prunes the limb off. He takes the branch down. If it's not producing, if it's not productive. Here's clip 9.
Number 1 is recognize that you are a human being just like the rest of us. And you are enough as you are today. Without top exam results, without a flash career, without a new designer outfit. You are enough as you are today.
It's almost too much to take. You're enough as you are today without top exam results and without a flash career. If you are a total loser, that is enough. A loser with a capital L on your forehead. That is enough. You've done enough. This is the BBC. Is there any soundness in it? Is this the message young people need today? General MacArthur, he was traveling across the country trying to find someone, trying to find an advocate that could help him get into West Point. And then he studied for a year with tutors. And then he worked out physically to try to correct the curvature of his spine. And then it came down to a test against 13 other applicants. And he performed higher than the rest. That's how he got in. He didn't get in with the message of, hey, you're enough, just where you are. You don't need a flash career. You don't need to get the top exam result. We're just going to take the bottom this year. This is 2020. Welcome to 2020. Here's one last clip from the BBC, if you can stand it, clip 10.
This is a really difficult time for lots of people. So go easy on the self-criticism. Try talking to yourself with encouragement, support, and kindness, the way that you would talk to a friend who is feeling that way. This is not a productivity contest. If we can find a balance between doing some meaningful activity and self-care, then we are doing enough.
Well, God is a family, and we're all in this together, and we're all helping each other. But we're certainly not unconcerned about our individual effort and responsibility within the family of God. Ephesians 4 talks about each member feeding on the other or contributing to the body. This is how there's strength. When each member, 1 Corinthians 12, Ephesians 4, when each member of the body is fulfilling its role, then you have health and vitality in the spiritual sense, right? Now, even in the physical sense, this is how we have the insight that we do. And we can look at things that are just crazy and insane, like the face mask thing. You hear nothing, do you? You hear nothing about diet and exercise. You hear nothing about sunlight and fresh air. You hear nothing about the immune system. You hear nothing. Not enough, anyway. There's a few lone voices out there. But for the most part, what's coming off the mainstream, the platform of the mainstream? You just heard it. Even in a time of lockdown, look, don't be too hard on yourself. If you're not being productive, if you're not aiming for a flash career, if you didn't get a good exam result, that's no problem. Isaiah 3. And we wonder why this is the way it is, this prophesied condition. It says, verse 1, for behold, the Eternal, the Lord of hosts, does take away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stay and the staff, the whole stay of bread and the whole stay of water. It's, I mean, a famine eventually. But before that, verse 2, the mighty man, the man of war, the judge, the prophet, the prudent, and the ancient. God has taken it all away. He's taken away the mighty man. He's taken away the man of war. He's taken away the top military generals. He's taken away the hard workers. And what are we left with? We're left with a lot of snowflakes. We're left with a lot of soft people. A lot of soft individuals that can't even function, that can barely function in a time of crisis because they're so scared. Notice, I think it's Proverbs chapter 2. I didn't get to copy these verses into my notes, so I'll have to do the old school way of turning to the actual passage. It all highlights, though, doesn't it, just how important God's system of education really and truly is. Mr. Armstrong in The Missing Dimension in Sex, he said the very first need of the first man and first woman was to be given essential knowledge. That is humanity's first need today. But humanity has rejected that essential knowledge. We've rejected the knowledge of God. And so what are we left with? A little bit of observation, a little bit of experimentation, and lots of human reasoning, faulty human reasoning. Isaiah 1 and verse 18, remember I read that, I think, earlier in the week. God says, come, let's reason together. I'll teach you. I'll give you a soundness of mind. God's spirit, remember, isn't the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. It's by God's spirit that we think straight. We need God's mind. We need God as our educator, teaching us, guiding us. I was telling the brethren a week or two ago just how some of the things we might take for granted in God's church, all of Mr. Armstrong's literature, the way that he wrote, the way that he taught, the plainness of speech. If you heard his broadcast or if you read one of his blue booklets, there was no doubting where he stood. He spoke the truth with simplicity, with power, with clarity, with depth. There's soundness in those writings. And you think about some of the emphasis in the messages even we've had over the past year to free ourselves from the devices, the gadgets, and to actually focus in on what we ought to be studying. I got an email a while back from one of our listeners who he's done some additional schooling later in his career, but he was talking about when he initially got his degree in engineering back in the early 1980s and just how that this is before laptops and iPhones and all those things, and how that you just had to know so much more information. You had to know it. It had to be internalized. It had to be in your head. And he talked about just how difficult and challenging the classes were back then. And he says he goes through these online courses today and they're just a breeze. They're so easy comparatively. And then if you don't know the answer, you've got a computer in your back pocket, basically. So you can just go Google it. And that's what we rely upon. And then something like this happens. And this is just the tiny, tiny tip of the iceberg, this pandemic, this crisis. And look at what it does to our young people. And then the BBC, thinking they're helping, they come along and say, listen, don't be too hard on yourself. Don't think about performing too well on an exam or even being productive. Just take it easy. That's not the message that our young people need today. They need essential knowledge. They need to build an entire spiritual edifice on top of this essential knowledge. They need to look to God as their educator. They need to apply themselves to their studies. They need to drive themselves in their work. They need to be committed, faithful to God's institutions, marriage, family, child rearing. This is how you build a godly society. This is how God's going to raise up a utopia. Lots of changes are coming. Proverbs 2 here. Verse 1, it says, my son, if you will receive my words and hide my commandments with you, so that you incline your ear unto wisdom and apply your heart to understanding, if, it says, yes, if you cry after knowledge and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver and search for her as for hid treasures, then shall you understand the fear of the Eternal and find the knowledge of God. Even with respect to education, you have to be driven. You have to be motivated. You have to hunger and thirst for knowledge. And then, of course, you go out and what we're meant to do, what God intends for us to do, is to use the instruction, to use it, and to lead a life of passion, of energy, and yes, productivity. Verse 6, it says, "For the Eternal gives wisdom. Out of his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He lays up sound wisdom for the righteous." It says, "He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly." You bring God into your education, you bring God into your career, and that's when life gets exciting. That's when you really are filled with joy. You think about what God is, our Father. He's a family man. John 4 says that God the Father and Christ the Son, they create. They create. What if they took the approach that the BBC suggested, God and Jesus Christ, and they just said, you know what? I think we're overdoing it here with this plan, this purpose that we're working out. I think we need to kick back and relax a little bit. I think, the ordinary, average, maybe even below average, I think that's fine. They have a spectacular purpose and plan. God is reproducing himself. He's reproducing his character and nature. Now, that's something to get excited about. And if you're excited about it, if you're filled with that vision, that purpose, it will show in the way that you lead your life. It will show in the way that you pursue a godly education. It's going to show in your work ethic. It's going to show in the way that you build a family, in the way that you contribute to the church, to the community even. Proverbs 8 and verse 1, it says, "Does not wisdom cry and understanding put forth her voice? She stands in the top of high places, by the way, in the places of the paths. She cries at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in, at the doors. Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of man." God is crying out. God is sounding the alarm. God is trying to awaken our people. It says, "O you simple, understand wisdom, and O you fools, be of an understanding heart." You're not going to hear that from the educators of today saying, "Look, the road that you're on, it's foolish. It's going to end in ruin. You're not going to end up happy. You're going to be miserable because of the course that you're on, because of the actions you're taking." That's fatherly love. God wants to give us everything he has. But will we work for it? Will we make it our passion? Will we pursue after it? Will we lead productive, energetic lives in service to God? It says here, "For I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things." It says, "For my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips." God speaks truth. God is truth. His word is truth. We can stake our lives on it. It says, "All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing froward or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understand, and right to them that find knowledge." God says, "Receive my instruction, not with silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold." Receive my instruction. Go after this way of life more so than you would after silver and gold. Here are true riches, spiritual riches. Here is soundness of mind, sound thinking. It says in verse 11, "For wisdom's better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it." It's better than rubies. It's more valuable. Verse 14 says, counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. By me kings reign and princes decree justice. By me princes rule and nobles, even all the judges of the earth. I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. There's some wise counsel in those words. There's some wise admonition, some wise instruction in these verses. This is what we need. It's what our young people need. It's what we as adults need. Filled with the Word of God. Filled with God's energy, with God's love, with God's outflowing concern for others. So that we can finish this work that He's given us to do and go on into all of eternity leading a godly and also a very productive life. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us this week, and we'll see you next week.